Welcome to Accessibility Craft, where we explore the complex challenges and emerging trends that are shaping digital accessibility while sipping on unique craft beverages. This show is proudly produced by Equalize Digital, the most trusted name in WordPress accessibility. Join us every week as we break down accessibility news and share the expert strategies we've used to help make millions of websites more accessible. Grab a drink. The show starts now.
Now we are going to kick off with WordPress Accessibility Meetup, Elevating the Web, an adventure in web accessibility with Nora Guy, Principal UX Designer, founder at LuxPath UX. I am very excited to introduce today's speaker. Nora is a seasoned web and UX designer who brings two decades of expertise across public and private sectors to her craft. She holds a CUA and a CPAC and is a huge advocate of lifelong learning. Nora has a BA in visual art from SUNY Empire State University. And when she's not designing, she's pursuing art, writing, and ballroom dancing with her husband, Eric. And I'm very excited to have you here, Nora, because I know that this is going to be a really interesting, creative presentation.
Without further ado, good morning, everyone. My name is Nora. As Amber introduced myself, me to you, I am a CPAC, and I also hold a Certified Usability Analyst certificate and bring quite a bit of knowledge, including WordPress, to the web. And my talk this morning is about elevating the web and sort of giving you ammunition that you're going to be able to use when you talk with stakeholders about why accessibility is so vital and some tips and tricks for how to elevate further. So first of all, our why, our mission as to why website accessibility is something that we're very passionate about. I think probably everyone in this room feels the same way that I do, that a website is really, it's something that you want to take care of. It's like a house. And when you are building a house, of course, you want people to be able to enter it and to enjoy your artwork and your furniture, but there can definitely be barriers to having people enter your home. And 1 billion or more people worldwide live with some form of disability. And that number varies, of course, from person to person as well, and can be driven by a number of different things, including genetics and acquired disabilities. 95% of websites fail WCAG on first review, and we want to really try to do whatever we can to remediate website accessibility issues and perform empathy-driven design and stick to those standards. I'm going to give you a little bit of a framework. We'll call it the balloon strategy. If you've seen the movie Up, you know that the film is about a man named Carl who attaches a whole bunch of balloons to his house and rises above it all and floats to Paradise Falls, which is where he and his wife Ellie had planned to go for decades. So the balloon strategy is going to help me explain and will help you to explain the concept of POUR, P-O-U-R, and the framework of POUR really is the framework for how to determine if your website is accessible to users. POUR stands for perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust. And I will go over each of these in the slides to come. Perceivable stands for the concept of, can they see the balloons? Basically, perceivable really refers to the concept of, can users perceive information not only visually, but can they perceive information being presented, which includes reading it or hearing it or just somehow or other taking it in a sensory manner. Okay. The ways to honor the P in POUR is through things like adding alt text to your images, ensuring that you have good color contrast between your text and your background, or between your icons and your background, a ratio at least 4.5 to 1 for most text sizes, according to WCAG 2, AA 2.1, 2.2. Do your videos need captions or audio tracks or transcripts? And do you provide responsive design, which means that your content can adapt to different screen sizes, devices, and zoom levels for whatever the user is happens to be using. The concept of operable, this is asking the question, can Carl steer the house? And this is enabling users to navigate and interact with the web. And this includes things like keyboard navigation, ensuring that users don't get trapped in anything like a drop down or a modal window, anything like that. They can use their keyboard, they can use the escape key, back buttons, things like that. Can they avoid any issues with timing, such as auto advancing or any time limited forms that don't allow for enough room and space for them to fill out form fields, and also things like seizure prevention, which includes things like flashing content and things like that that blink more than 3 times per second. The concept of understandable is the map. As if you've seen the movie, you know that Carl and Russell start out with GPS and then they go to other ways of finding their way around as they float through the air. Carl's map guided him and Russell to Paradise Falls, and your interface must similarly provide clear direction. This can include things like clear labels, predictable UI, and error recovery, and just really helping your users to get there. And of course, understandable also pairs with the other concepts, especially perceivable, in getting them to where they need to go. The concept of robust is asking the question, will the house hold together in the storm or in a storm? And the way to get to a robust structure is by using things like semantic HTML, using the proper structure for things like buttons and for other HTML blocks. You can use ARIA landmarks to bridge gaps where HTML can't, and also ensure things like cross-browser functionality. Make sure that your content works with all vessels, again, all devices, phones, browsers, and also with screen readers like NVDA or JAWS. So, moving on to what we do with PoRR, and we're going to jump right in and really grab onto the spirit of adventure and looking at what is new and really just sort of big in the world of tech. Of course, everyone is talking about AI. And I feel like this is one of those things where we're flying the plane as we're building it, because we're constantly hearing about different types of AI. I think agentic AI was kind of one of the later iterations that's out and about now. And really, everyone is sort of figuring out what we're going to be doing with it. Some programs. I know that some of you work in the public sector, and I'm currently on assignment with the state of California, so I know that Cite Improve is really kind of a big deal in the world of public sector. I also use it in my last private sector job, and it does use a little bit of AI to help guide the designer or the developer in identifying accessibility errors, issues, and helping to figure out how to remediate them. I would call that kind of a lift, a little bit, to use the balloon metaphor. But we also have to think about, what are good uses of AI and maybe not so optimal uses of AI. So good AI can include things like agents acting as personas, not to take the place of testing with actual users, but really just kind of trying to predict how that may go, or using LLMs to assist with code remediation. Of course, you're always going to have to, if you do write code, really test and ensure that nothing breaks. And then the opposite side of that is what I would call the squirrel distraction, which are things like AI overlays. I know that things like accessibility can be a little bit of a topic that comes up. I'm trying to be I'm trying to be not too precise with what I'm saying here, because I know that there's arguments on both sides. And also over reliance on AI, because it really is something that's constantly being in flux and constantly being redeveloped. So we're going to think of AI as, I almost think of it as like a junior member of the team, or just something that really takes a lot of information and sort of spits it back. It's a little bit like Doug, the dog. It's enthusiastic and it says, "I have just met you and I love you," but it really just needs a lot of training and translation, and also the human touch. So the human in the middle is something that I would advocate for AI.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
Navigating the storm is something that we will all have to do at some point or other as we're going through this whole journey of accessibility. And some of the things that I've noticed in my career in both public and private sector are that you come up against are things like the make it look pretty approach, which is where you will have a stakeholder that they have a specific brand color. For example, my last corporate job, our brand color was lime green, and there was a lot of discussion about lime green buttons with white text over them. And we had to make the argument for being true to the brand, but also following WCAG standards that that comes up quite a bit. Or there's the perception that that's what designers do. And we really kind of have to be advocates for functionality as well as form, and sort of make that case to not only stakeholders, but also to our team members that we work with. If you're a designer and you work with developers that are not as familiar with ADA, or WCAG, we'll have to educate a little bit. Form errors can be sort of a big trap for a lot of users, especially if there are things like error messages that don't necessarily show them how to move forward, or on, unclear labels, what am I supposed to enter here, or validation that happens that maybe doesn't give them enough guidance that they need to be able to enter the information correctly. Videos can be a big accessibility issue. If you have videos on YouTube that you embed on your site, or even just, straight MP4 file formats that you're embedding onto a page, and you may have to look to see where you can add things like closed captioning or audio tracks or anything like that. And closed captioning, of course, it's beneficial for hard of hearing and deaf users, but also neurodivergent users. People with ADHD like to watch videos with captions on, and they can be just really beneficial. Also for people in noisy spaces that watch videos while on mute, they can really be helpful. PDF, we call this PDF hell on the slide. I've been living in the world of PDF for the last few weeks, and it's not only PDFs, it's really all documents that need to be made accessible. And this includes Word or PowerPoint slides, but PDFs in particular can sometimes be prone to just really being scanned images. And then, of course, NVIDIA can't read that, so you have to go back and do optical character recognition to get your document to a place where it is actually text that can be scanned and tagged. We use a tool. There are tools out there on the market like PDFix that can help you put in the proper tags so that NVDA or JAWS can read the document. And just, something that can easily be bypassed if you have a lot of documents on your website. So that's another quick gotcha there to watch out for as you're navigating your way through. And of course, ADA lawsuits are increasingly something that has become a more visible deal in the world of websites. Of course, in 2025, there were thousands of them, and they can cost tens of thousands of dollars each. So we're going to try to find some way to shield ourselves from the lightning and the thunder clouds that roll in. Once you've gotten to a place where you feel like you are able to get your website more or less remediated, you're going to feel like you're heading to Paradise Falls or that you've made it to Paradise Falls. The slide says it's the final destination, but we all know that websites are never completely done, and there is no way to say, oh, this is 100% accessible, because we're dealing with humans and humans are all different. But you can get to a place where things are better and clearer for your audience and for your users. And really, what you would want to impart to your line of business owners or anyone else that you're working with is that this is not a burden. This is not something that it is put upon us, depending on whether you work in the public sector or private sector. It could be something that you have to do, but it's not something that it's not a burden. It's not going to negatively impact your site if you make it accessible, or at least in theory, it shouldn't. It's what enables your content to soar and to really help you to get to a better place with expanding your reach. You're going to be able to serve over 1 billion people that live with a disability, and this includes the aging. There's your population that exists in all sectors, and they are consumers. They use agency services, and it's really in your best interest to serve them. For everyone, you're going to have better SEO if you are able to remediate your content to where it's well structured for accessibility. You'll rise higher in Google web search results and get better rankings, as well as your content being able to be read by NVDA. Of course, you will have legal protection if you are proactive and you are able to, also in addition to remediate, but build content accessibly from the beginning. And of course, you will have enhanced user experience if you build everything with accessibility in mind. And I think of accessibility as under the big umbrella of user experience design. And of course, all the concepts play against each other. They exist hand in hand. And really, accessibility benefits everyone, not only those that live with disability, but you and me and anyone else who may be a part of your user base. So the call to action here is don't wait for a lawsuit, don't wait for anyone to raise a concern, but really start building accessibility into your process today. The last corporate job that I was at started building accessibility at the design stage, where mockups were created with accessibility and user experience in mind, and then would be handed off to developers. And I think that's a step in the right direction. I want to encourage you all to really become a good steward of the web by becoming a senior wilderness explorer of accessibility and to earn your Grape Soda merit badge. And some of the ways that you can really do this, particularly if you're starting to think about creating an accessibility program, is look at running audits and think about your cadence for running an audit. Are you going to be, running these tests automatically or manually? Will you be doing it monthly or, biweekly even? And just think about how that will enable you to also to show progress over time. Make sure that you are completing manual tests, of course. Use your keyboard to test keyboard navigation. Make sure to review all your video content for things like captioning and also audio tracks or whatever else could be needed. Test using your screen reader if you have one available. If not, NVDA is free, or even VoiceOver can be super helpful. Ensure that you have proper alt text on all images, and just making sure to follow the guidelines for alt text, making sure that it's descriptive, not too long, but also just really kind of think about from the perspective of someone who is listening to the web. Look for your color contrast, of course, the 4.5 to 1. Look at the semantic structure of your HTML or the structure of your HTML to ensure that it is semantic. And then, of course, test with real people. I know we're all pressed for time, but whenever possible, see if you can recruit a couple of people to test. Maybe run, this is something that I've done in my past, run two sets of user testing, one with a general user base, but also one where I'm specifically asking, do people use any sort of assistive device? Because that will help me know if I need to adjust anything in my code. And, also just anyone else, grab a coworker and see what you can find out by talking to people. When we've done all of our work and we make it to Paradise Falls, or we've even just had a great adventure with Russell and Kevin and our balloons, we will really just sort of have an adventure book that we can then refer back to. We know that we've met the perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust concepts of the web, and we've earned our Grape Soda merit badge, and you can see that we have it tagged to the top of our top corner of our book here, and can add that badge along with our other badges to our hat. And we know that we can refer back to it when we move forward in our careers as UX designers and as developers. What I want to leave you with is that accessibility is out there, and also adventure is out there. And when you are looking at accessibility through the lens of an adventure and one that's also really never truly complete, you know that it's ongoing and can always be revisited time and time again. I've really appreciated and enjoyed speaking with all of you today. I don't know if you have any questions, but if you would like to keep in touch, I'm on LinkedIn and happy to talk with anyone that has questions or comments or just wants to connect. Thank you.
Thank you. So I do think that we definitely have a few questions. I wrote a few, and I see one for anyone else who wants to dive deeper into this. If you want to post anything in the Q&A, that would be helpful, and we can go through them. Someone had asked, they said, I have seen where only the English portion of a video is captioned, and
Oh.
other languages ignored or have a generic placeholder. They said they even saw this during the Olympics. Shouldn't all of the verbal be captioned, even if it's not in English? Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I think I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, I'm on contract with the California Judicial Council right now, and I can tell you that there's content that exists in, English and Korean, and there's at least five or six different languages. And I would say if documents exist in all of those languages, why wouldn't you also remediate your video content that exists in other languages as well, whatever they may be?
Yeah, I know when we are working with anyone who has multiple language videos, we will always require them to caption those videos. I would generally say if you are creating content that you expect people to need to consume in a language other than English, that it should also be captioned in that language. And I would just build that into the budget for the video, whether you're producing them in-house or like whoever vocalized or wrote the script for the video, in theory, can help with captioning. And then you just need to make sure that you have someone that can check the timing to make sure that it's appropriately paced.
I agree.
So I did actually have a question. So I liked your comparison of AI to Doug the dog from the Up movie, which I thought was really interesting. And I think it's worth diving just a little bit more into like how AI can act as personas, because you had mentioned that as an example of good. Do you have, can you describe any like concrete examples of that, or any recommendations for how an AI agent can act like a person with disabilities?
Yeah, so AI is it's one of those things where its output is only as good as the input. And obviously, for people that have been using AI, that the more input you give it, the better, the more content that it has to pull from. So what I've done is, and I had access to Copilot at the time, so I was asking Copilot, and you have to be very precise too, because it's very literal. So you have to, in this one example, I said something like, pretend that I am presenting this auto services website to you, and you are, I think I gave it a name, like your name is this, and you are visually impaired, and you are trying to buy a car and find financing. And what you're going to do is, and then I walked it through a sort of a user testing scenario. You're going to go to this page, you're going to find the button for apply for a loan, you're going to fill out your information. When I do user testing, I'll even say, your credit score is this, you work this job, your budget is this for this particular car, and I want to see how you are going to go through and navigate this specific task that I've given you. And you have to be that precise. I think with personas, you really just kind of have to look at, and particularly, if you're looking for something where maybe there's a challenge there, this is your specific challenge, and here's the whole backstory for this persona. So then it can sort of try to predict how an actual person would tackle the task.
Yeah, I wonder if some of that aligns a little bit with creating specific skills. And so you could generate these as skills that you could feed into AI. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I definitely have seen actually yesterday, my partner Steve, he posted in our company chat that he used a whole bunch of his credits trying to get AI to like click a close button in a modal. And he's like, why won't it do it? And then he inspected it and he's like, oh, it's not actually a button. So it is interesting that I think like some of these semantic HTML failures can also like cause issues for the AI. But I don't know if I have explored as much like how to train an AI to respond as if they were using a certain type of assistive technology. So I thought that was an interesting concept that you proposed.
Yeah, it's definitely something to play around with, and maybe there's also the possibility there of training it to use a specific technology like NVDA to navigate a page or anything where it's like technology talking to technology is still kind of being built out. My partner and I do on weekends we'll have little hackathons where we play with doing vibe coding of different apps, and one of mine is an app that tests against WCAG and PDF UA one and all the other just like looking at how accessible websites and mobile apps are. And I had to be very precise about, okay, this is what you're looking for, and I want you to give me these results. And so it had to go and fetch the WCAG standards from somewhere else and then find a way to process them and give the data back to me.
Is there a certain language model that you have found does a better job of testing against web content accessibility guidelines and like actually finding issues when you give it the right instructions?
I know that Claude is the one that everyone kind of is using for development. And to be quite frank, I haven't dove as much into that one. I like to use Lovable for my app coding adventures for now, but definitely still exploring all the others. But definitely looking at the different chat models that are out there now, I feel like Gemini is the one that I go to for all things technical, just on a day-to-day basis. And then of course, Claude Code is something that people are I've heard more and more about Claude as time goes by, and I know that they just had a big release earlier this week, so definitely excited to jump in when I have a little bit of free time.
Someone had asked if you could give some more examples on how to turn things into more like empathy-driven storytelling. So, do you have maybe any concrete examples where you've been talking to stakeholders or trying to help them see outside of their own personal perspective?
So my last private sector job, most recent one, was working for a credit union where I just happened to also be a member. And I just happened to have multiple family members who live with some form of disability. So I had the perspective of an actual user, but also could tell the story of, okay, you have a member, because we in credit union world, you call people members, not customers. We have a member and they have ADHD, and they were trying to check the rate on their credit card, and none of the labels on the credit card page in digital banking really got them there. So maybe could we look at the labels for the tabs, or could we look at adding either a link or a button or something like that to help get them there? And we had to write out sometimes user stories or journey mapping to sort of figure out and sort of predict what the user may do. This is also a great argument for recruiting some users and seeing how they interact in real life, but also because I had that perspective of watching like my son try to figure out how to use digital banking for the first time, and seeing his perspective as someone who's neurodivergent of, oh, what does this mean and what does this mean? And I could kind of gather from that background, and I could take that information distilled into a little story to tell to my stakeholder, hey, I actually saw this happen with a member. I could give my stakeholders detailed information about what I thought could help the user in that case. And also in the credit union industry, you get a lot of feedback, right? Because they're trying to do their banking, and they're very open about that. And it would be great if that existed across all sectors and all types of business where people just tell you what they were trying to do or what they wish they had. That could be really a great source of information. Then you could tell those stories based on the feedback that you get.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is probably no replacing having somebody who is skeptical actually watch a real person with disabilities try to use a website. Not use a website with instructions like go here, click this, go here, click this, but more like you were describing before, you want to buy XYZ or you want to open a new checking account and you don't want it to, and you want it to be the one with the highest interest. What would you do? Right. And then just watching them actually go through the website. I think it's been interesting because we've had people come to us occasionally and they're like, okay, we're going to do user testing because we have to check a box. Or because, I mean, there was one customer where they literally said in their sales call, we're doing this because we've gotten sued and we want to prove that it's usable. And then that person sat in on the user testing session and they're like, wow, I'm frustrated watching you do this. And it totally changed their perspective because they entered it thinking, eh, this is going to prove that the lawsuit is wrong. And then they were like, no, actually, I think the lawsuit might have been right. Right. Like, I really think the best way to create that empathy is actually showing or maybe drawing parallels to real people, like you were talking about.
I mean, what you just said is a perfect example and a perfect argument for doing user testing because I think we've probably all seen this where people will say, this is how I would do this. And then when you watch them actually use the app or you know, whatever they're trying to do, they do things differently. They have a different perception of how they would do things than they actually end up doing them.
Someone had asked, what are your thoughts about giving violators a 30-day timeline for remediation of ADA violations?
Ooh, that's an interesting topic.
And I wonder if this goes a little bit towards like the proposed laws in California. And I don't know if you know a lot about those, but they have been trying to deal with the fact that there's so many lawsuits under the UNRU Civil Rights Act. And they're trying to be like, okay, maybe we need to create a better process around this for small businesses. But yeah, do you have thoughts on this whole giving people a 30-day timeline?
I will just say 30, well, the team sizes that I've been on, the team I'm on right now, I think is about 15 people, something like that. A
15 people
30-day
that work
timeline
on the
would be
website? Or 15
to
people total.
ADA,
Okay.
specifically ADA. I
Okay.
forget how large the IT department is, but our little section is 15. And in my previous experience, it was 3 people that worked on web, and I was the ADA kind of person. That would be a really steep timeline. 30 days is kind of a lot. I know when we thought the deadline was April 24th, and everyone was, you know, pulling up, you know, pulling together, pulling in people from other teams to try to get there, working on weekends, working in evenings, and then when they gave us the respite, we all just went, oh, thank God. But we. That would be very tough. It's tough. It's interesting to see how that is at a state agency where everyone's kind of pulling together. I personally think financial services, education, legal, healthcare, if they're not already going, oh, we need to do this, they probably will get, you know, they'll get further along the path of we need to do this sooner than later, and sooner than other industries, just because that, you know, those highly regulated fields, I can 100% see that becoming a bigger and bigger barrier and a bigger deal over time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm like 30 days is definitely enough time to fix some critical issues. Like if your navigation menu doesn't work, of course you could fix that. But expecting a whole website, especially some of these very complex websites with like advanced search and filters and all kinds of stuff to be 100% remediated, you know, or millions of pages, lots of PDFs. That is definitely a tough timeline, but it's a weird dance, right? Because this, I mean, the ADA itself has been around for decades. So it's not like this is new. It's just people have been ignoring it to a degree.
We just started paying more and closer attention to it. And I've noticed that there are things in so the PDF I mentioned the PDF world, the standards for testing PDFs. There's WCAG 2.2 that you can test against, WCAG 2.1, all those PDF UA1, PDF UA2. And it just the standards test against different things, and the different tools test against different things. And everyone's kind of learning now, oh, Acrobat tests for these things, but you really kind of need other tools and other testing methods. And it's almost like a game of whack-a-mole where you remediate one thing and then you find other things that you need to, and you can also, fix one thing and then cause other issues other places. Of course. So yeah, a month is a very short period of time.
Yeah, I noticed in the chat earlier while you were presenting, Craig had said that he's on a mission to get people to stop, he put all caps, using PDFs, just go another route. Why are we still using something made for print in 1993, because I guess that's when PDFs were invented, to make documents for the web. And I definitely feel like that is a really like the approach that I tend to try and take as well. And I think it makes it easier because if you're like, well, if we can get all the content on the website and we can fix the website, then you're not also having to fix all these documents and sometimes re-remediate them if they have to be edited later. Is that an approach that you've taken as well?
Quite frankly, recently I have just been given, okay, here are the documents. Let's fix them. But I've been on a previous session at, I think it was Equalize, one of the sessions that Equalize gives, where the presenter made a really good case for move away from PDFs, move toward Word documents whenever possible. They're much more accessible, easier to remediate. And here's all the reasons why. PDF, I think when I first started doing accessibility work, which is like 2005, I think I kind of thought PDFs were more accessible, and also the fact that the content was locked down made it more safe or more secure for the web. But I can definitely see the argument being made for moving away from that format, or even just if it's a form, use an HTML form if you can. You can make those accessible via HTML a little bit easier. We used something called FormStack at my last job, and you could talk to the developer if you run into any issues that they can remediate on their end.
Yeah, way easier than fixing a PDF form. I agree.
Yeah.
No form should be PDFs. I feel like if it has to be, there's this weird thing with state federal government where sometimes it's like, but it has to output on the PDF. But I'm like, that does not mean the person has to fill it in on the PDF. You can still take everything they gave you, put it on the PDF that, I mean, we've worked with some things where they're still like, we print these out and we stick them in a manila folder. And I'm like, do you know what year it
Uh-huh.
is? But sometimes, especially in government, it moves slow and this is how they approach things. But I'm like, it doesn't mean they have to fill out the PDF. You can still get that info there
That
programmatically.
100% resonates. I'm laughing because back years and years ago, I worked for one of the counties here in California, and there were printed documents of everything. I had file folders on my desk, and then it was a parks department. It was a huge parks department out here in the Bay Area, and I remember taking boxes and boxes of files and bringing them to a specific department that dealt with all of those and put them in storage, like physical files. And I just that's such a that is so reminiscent of those days. And I think agencies probably still kind of work that way, but it's something that we'll have to look at evolving over time.
Yeah. So we have two questions that are kind of related on the topic of like how people think. So the first one is, how do you respond to someone who says we don't need to be ADA compliant people with disabilities are not our target audience?
I would say, well, for one, if you live long enough, you're eventually going to acquire some sort of difference in how you experience the world. It's kind of inevitable. But also just thinking about, okay, it's not only a box that you check off, it's doing the right thing. And I think all companies, whether you're, credit union or parks department or whoever you want to do the right thing, I would guess. But also, you just really kind of want to do right by whoever your user base is. And if that argument doesn't seem to sway them, you will make more money if you are able to provide services and goods to your target user base. And the disability community, I think I read they have a buying power of $1 trillion or something like that. I mean, these are people. This goes back to empathy. Just because you don't know anyone that happens to have a specific disability, that doesn't mean that they don't exist. And it's just one of those
Yeah.
things.
Sometimes you just don't know people have disabilities. One of our team members, I learned after he'd worked for us for a couple of years that he's colorblind. I didn't know. Because it's
Who
not
has two
like,
kids are
in his
colorblind?
job interview or on his first day, he's like, by the way, I'm colorblind. Like it just came up during conversation at one point, and I was like, oh. Well, it's a good thing that we try really hard internally, even in our own practices, to follow what we preach, because you can't tell the difference between red and green. And if that's the way we're color coding good and bad things without, like, we use emojis and stuff, because I was like, we should do this, right? And it turned out that he really needs those emojis, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, the invisible disabilities that people have, I can resonate. Two of my stepkids are colorblind, and my last corporate job, our corporate colors were lime green and forest green, and we had a billboard on the 101 freeway out here that was lime green background, dark green text, and my stepson was like asking his dad, what does that say?
Oh,
And
because he couldn't differentiate between the two colors. The contrast wasn't high enough.
just couldn't differentiate, or was having a really hard time kind of, and it also had to do with like the, of course, the brightness and darkness of the colors. But to your point, and also that goes back to WCAG, where you really kind of want to look at, okay, how do you express that this is, a link that you can follow, color difference, underline, and also for people that scan quickly, people that, don't read your whole page, or, again, ADHD, you may look through really quickly to see, what elements can I follow as a link, or, what can I interact with?
So the second question along this line was, many people think that accessibility is a separate concept where the quote, regular developers build it in the quote, traditional way. And then an accessibility trained person is supposed to come after and add accessibility. How do we change that way of thinking?
That's a great question.
It
I
really
think
is.
really, yeah, I really like the idea of design first development, where you really just ask the UX designers to, it's like, I think a lot of people think of it as reverse engineering, how would someone, but this is actually the way it should be. This is the forward thing, the correct, the non-reverse way. You have a user, they need to do this. How are we going to get there? And then build around the user, and accessibility is just part of that.
I think too, like on that, we talk a lot about how can organizations reduce cost. And the earlier you get it in the process, and even if you're investing upfront in training your quote traditional developer in or your design team or whatever that is, you have to invest in that training. And yes, it might slow them down in the beginning because they have to maybe spend more time checking their work for things that they never checked for before. But in the long run, that significantly can reduce cost because as they build up those muscles and it just becomes intuitive, think about we all had, I mean, most of us, I'm assuming here, there might be some young people who weren't here for this, but listening, but all of us had to learn how to make things mobile responsive because we started never doing that. And then there was this whole thing of, oh, wait, I have to make my window more narrow, more narrow, more narrow, and like make sure that the code I wrote actually looks good on all these different sizes, right? And we had to learn to do that. But now you would never hire a developer who's like, oh, I don't look at it outside of desktop. And I think it's just a matter of like building that skill up. And then once you do, it does really save money. And so I think like if you can get organizations, I always like to tie it to like what are their KPIs, right? And if you want your website to be launched for faster with lower risk and lower cost, then you have to include accessibility at the beginning and not as this add-on after the fact.
Yep, 100%. To your point about the responsiveness, you probably remember this too. We would build websites for at least this is my experience. We build them for desktops and laptop devices, and then we had a whole separate website that was mobile responsive, like a whole separate
And then you were
thing. And
maintaining two websites. You had to update content on two of them. Yeah.
You just
Which
don't
is
do
the
that.
answer
And
on why can't we just make a separate accessible website? And I'm like, because that also increases your cost for a very long time. Like you're gonna pay people to update content two places. Like you're not a good idea. Who knows how that hurts your SEO?
It hurts your SEO. You can use your CMS, you can use WordPress to try to maintain, images and whatnot, but your developers are not going to be happy if you're making them maintain two different things.
So we had one other question that I'm just going to address real quick, only because it's kind of technical and a little bit off topic, but someone did ask about making read more buttons accessible. And I want to let you know to the person, because it was anonymous, so I don't know who it is, that I just posted a written response with a link over to our documentation that actually shows like how to do this with screen reader text or ARIA labels or that kind of thing. We could vaguely talk about it here, but I feel like it's better to see actual examples. So I wanted to say that. I didn't see any other questions from folks, so we may be able to wrap up a little early. Can you remind people, you said LinkedIn is the best place to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn is a really good place. I'm there. Haven't been posting as frequently lately, but definitely feel free to reach out and message me if you have any questions or any thoughts, or just want to go, oh my God, I totally get what you were saying. And happy to connect with folks always.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Nora. And it was great to kind of see the parallels that you made with the movie and hear about all of your thoughts afterwards. So I appreciate you staying for this extra Q&A. All
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
right, everyone, please go check out upcoming events. Don't forget, we will have two events, one on the 19th, and then Global Accessibility Awareness Day on May 21st. If you want to get involved and actually make a difference for WordPress, the CMS, that would be great. Someone said, wait, they have more questions. But I would say if you want to follow up with us, I can pass those along to Nora or you can reach out to her on LinkedIn. Thanks so much.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you found this episode valuable, please help us reach more people by subscribing, reviewing or liking the show, and sharing this with your colleagues. Accessibility Craft is a production of Equalize Digital Inc. Steve Jones composed our theme music. To learn how Equalize Digital can support you on your accessibility journey, visit us at equalizedigital.com.